Hey, hey, hey.
Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today I have with me your other hostess, Hanako.
Hello, hello.
And today we are discussing Game of Thrones.
Bro,
we're keeping our promise, guys, to talk about every episode as they come out at the expense of other TV shows. I think what we have coming up soon is Valerian. We have, we're going to be talking about Preacher soon. And maybe, Midnight Texas is something you need to watch, Hanako.
Yes, I know. I've got to get on that this weekend.
That's our, since True Blood is off the air and American Gods has ended for the season, we need another skanky show to watch and another Charlaine Harris story to watch, and that's Midnight Texas. So,
yeah, I think I'm going to get caught up this weekend.
I think it's just two episodes, so you're good.
Oh, good, good, good.
Yeah. So, enough for that jabber jaw. We're going to talk about Game of Thrones season 7, episode 3. Of course, I don't know the title of it. I could have just kept going and not pointed out that I forgot the title. But, let's be honest. We're keeping it on. We're keeping it open. Right?
We're going to keep it open. It's called The Queen's Justice.
Boom. See, Hanako is always on top of it. Okay. Okay, so, Hanako, what happened? Well, we don't have to do a full recap, but let's, because I know to me, once I'm finished with this episode, I was like, this is one of my most favorite episodes that I've seen in a while. It just, I don't know, when I was finished watching it, it felt right, it felt good, it felt like everything about Game of Thrones came together in this one episode.
See, what did I tell you last week? Because you were saying something completely different
last week didn't do it for me. Last week was not it.
But I think what's going on is we're starting to see where the storyline is starting to come together. So all these different people that are, that we've been watching for 7 years and their paths have, been totally separate, they're all starting to cross now. And I think that may have been part of what you were feeling on, Sunday, because it's like now we've got characters who we've been seeing on screen since the beginning and they're meeting for the first time in this episode. And, you've got closure, well, maybe not complete closure, but you've got some closure to other areas of the story. So it's all starting to come together. And I will say this, last week, of course, we know last week's episode, there was the tease of the long-awaited Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen meeting.
I think
I said was, I hope they don't drag this out and make us wait until the last scene. And thank you, Game of Thrones guys, for hearing me, because, no, that was the very first thing we saw, literally Jon Snow arrives at Dragonstone and that's the scene we get to open up the show. And it was amazing. And the funny thing is it wasn't amazing because they met and hit it off. It was amazing to me because they met and their two different personalities kind of clashed with each other, but they each held their own while still showing kind of sort of respect to each other. So that was interesting to me. I've said it the last couple of episodes, Daenerys' attitude, she's starting to, I won't say turn me off, I won't say irritate me, because I still like her as a character. She's still a strong character, but she's getting to the point now where I feel like she's starting to kind of mimic her brother Viserys in the whole you know, in the whole, oh, I'm the rightful heir to the king, you know, to the Iron Throne. I'm supposed to be ruling over, you know, the Seven Kingdoms, blah, blah, blah. It's stuff that we heard from her brother first season.
So my take on that is something someone said last week, maybe it was you, where in the book she's more of a cranky bee, and she is arrogant and more like Cersei, but on the TV show they made her softer. So maybe in these later episodes they're bringing out her real personality, and because we're not accustomed to that, that it feels foreign. But I think for some reason to me, this feels, because of what someone said last week, true to her book character, and it didn't surprise me as much. And I kind of enjoyed the back and forth she had with Jon Snow. And I enjoyed Jon Snow more than her, mainly because there was a little bit more comic relief, because, you know, when her servant lady chick, whatever her name is, I forget.
Missandei.
Thank you. I'm sorry, actress Missandei of you. She, you know, introduced, you know, she introduced Daenerys, and she gave her this long-winded speech of Mother of Dragons, walk her through fire.
It was like Daenerys Targaryen, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
You know, and they just went on and on, and then he's like, "Yeah, this is Jon Snow, King of the North." And then, it was just like,
right.
I just liked the way they played with it, because it was just really cool. Because we've seen these characters for so long, to me, for some reason, it just felt like they'd been talking the whole time, and it was, I don't know, it was just weird. But I liked how when they came upon the castle, or where her home, that they still hadn't seen the dragons yet, right?
Yes.
And so the dragons swooped up, because the thing is what I thought where Jon Snow could have won an argument was that a lot of people didn't believe dragons existed,
right?
And so, and if they didn't see it for themselves, and they kept seeing it, you know, people kept saying it, but at first people didn't believe it, and then she kept going and going, and they believed it. He should have brought up that, hey, you know what? People didn't believe in your dragons,
right?
So, you know, I understand why you wouldn't believe in my White Walkers, but they're real, like your dragons are real. If magic like that exists, magic like the White Walkers exists. And, you know, I'm really shocked, Hanako, that people don't believe more in the White Walkers. I get it from how they were explaining it, but because we've been seeing it from the first scene since this show started.
Right.
Just accustomed to it. So to me, to hear after all these years that some people don't believe, it's shocking to me. It's like, are we starting all over? This is crazy.
It is. And I kind of had the same reaction that you did. It's like, you know, Daenerys and even Tyrion, like, you're saying you don't believe in the White Walkers, but you're looking at three dragons, and dragons haven't existed for thousands of years. So if that could exist, why not? And I like the fact that, you know, like I said, when they did meet, that it wasn't an immediate kinship, you know, no pun intended, but it wasn't an immediate like towards each other. It was really kind of a push and pull. It's kind of like a tug of war. And, you know, Jon gave as good as he got. And I think he was more respectful to Daenerys in that sense, because he not once while he opened his mouth was he ever disrespectful. Not once was he arrogant. Not once did he, you know, try to take her down a notch. He and Davos both, just like Varys last week, just basically spoke to her with a very matter-of-fact thing. And Jon and Varys kind of, they have similar objectives, if you will, because Daenerys just wants to rule the Seven Kingdoms. Jon is like, I just want everybody to be safe. You know, I'm here to try to save the people, which is the same thing Varys said last week. He's here for the people. But
and you know what? When she said that, he kind of when he said that to her, she kind of backed down a little bit.
Yes, because I think she could. I mean, you can tell when you see somebody who's basically, and this is the other thing that I liked about the whole introduction thing. You know, Daenerys has accrued all these titles, and she, you know, she makes it a point to give out all of her titles. Whenever she's introduced to people, whenever people ask her who she always has to throw one or, you know, more of those titles out. And I think it kind of shows the extremes between their personalities. Like, she has to be this showy person, and not showy in a negative way, but, you know, Daenerys, basically, she is the epitome of, you know, started from the bottom and now she's there, because she basically she's been on the run her whole life. She's been, mm-hmm. you know, fleeing for her life. So she literally had to crawl from the bottom and kind of grab her power. So I'm not begrudging her that. But Jon Snow was kind of in the same position, and he now, too, is also in a position of power, but he doesn't use it the same way she does. And even just as simple as Sir Davos saying, this is Jon Snow, King of the North, and he had to start saying all the other stuff. Jon is not a person who is impressed by titles, and he is not a person who is looking for the titles. He's not looking for that recognition. His whole thing is, hey, I just want these White Walkers dead so we can kind of live our lives and be done with it. That's all he wants, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And another thing that I really liked about Daenerys when she talked to Jon Snow is she said exactly what you just said, but she actually said it. She didn't allude to it. She said she's been raped, beaten, spat upon, all this other type, you know, crawling through the mud. And I just thought that was really impressive, because usually you never really hear a woman character say anything like that, unless it's this emotional, I've been raped, and it's a whole cry. I mean, not to, you know, make fun of them or anything like that.
No,
it's
no,
just,
no,
like,
I
it's
get what
always,
you're saying.
It's always different. When it's, you know, there's always a little bit of shame or anything, you know, associated with modern characters or anything like that. But here,
she's not using it as you know, to show that she was weak or that she was a victim. She's showing it to say, hey, this is everything that I've been through and this is where I am. She and Sansa are kind of the same. In that sense, because even when Sansa saw Littlefinger for the first time after all of this, when she was talking about what she had to endure being married to Ramsay, her demeanor to him was the same way. She was like, yeah, this is what he did, and this is, you know, this is what I survived through. And, you know, she was very matter-of-fact about it. And, you know, Sansa, knowing what we know about where her character started, she could have easily used that to play the victim. And I think at the beginning she almost did, but now she's like, look, I got through this. I can get through anything. I see the same thing with Daenerys. The other thing about Daenerys that I liked in this encounter is the fact that when Jon Snow, you know, basically told her, yeah, I'm not about to bow to you. I'm not about to do this because this is what your father did to my family. Instead of patronizing him, she immediately, yes, my father was an evil person. Please let me apologize for what my ancestors have done to you. The fact that she even did that, my respect level for her grew so much, because she didn't have to admit that. You know what I'm saying? She
could have admitted that though. Right. In admitting that though, Hanako, what is it? I mean, because they were both talking about lineages and rightful heirs and stuff like that, and I couldn't really tell who was correct. Because
I think
to me,
they were both correct. I think in some ways, that whole thing, when Jon Snow walked in, this is just the way that I perceive it. You know, Daenerys is sitting on her high horse as the, you know, the Lady of Dragonstone and the, you know, the Queen of Dragons, the Queen of everything. She's the rightful ruler of the Seven Kingdoms. And Jon Snow is still walking in as a bastard of Winterfell, as the King of the North. And then as they talk, it's kind of like they go from her being way up top and him being on the bottom. It's kind of like they start evening themselves out to where they're on a level playing field. And then Tyrion kind of helps that along as well, because Tyrion talks to Jon, and then he also talks to Daenerys, just kind of playing devil's advocate, saying, look, you need to look at it from this point of view, and you need to see this from this point of view, to where they could kind of meet themselves in the middle. And I think there's a better understanding between them. I don't know if they'll become allies yet, but I think that they understand each other a little bit more, and I think there's maybe a greater level of respect than there was when John first walked in the room. I just think it has to do with both of them being, you know, a little humble towards each other to say, hey, this is how this is going to work, you know? So.
Speaking of Tyrion, I like the way how he started hearing Jon Snow talk about, you know, UFO, aliens, White Walkers and stuff. And he was just like, I didn't know this was going to happen. And I didn't know he was batshit crazy. And so I really liked how they played that off. They kept it serious yet light at the same time. And it was just well done.
Very balanced with all the characters too. It's like not one, even though we know that John and Daenerys are the two most important people in that room or in that scene, it's like everyone had their own role to play, and everyone was kind of on an equal ground as far as their importance to the scene. And I like that. It was very balanced.
Yeah. So something that I don't know where in the episode this happened, but Red Witch. Okay, so this is where I'm gonna take you to task, Conoco.
Okay, Melisandre.
She. I told you yesterday, not yesterday, last episode, that I felt her showing up to Dragonstone was useless and all this other type of stuff. And then she showed up just to have a few words with what's his face. Then at the beginning of this episode, she didn't even see John. She left.
No, but this is why I said you have to remember they both gave her an ultimatum the last time she saw them. Davos told her, if I ever see you again, I will kill you. And John told her the same thing. He banished her from the north. And
but he's not going to stay there. He's not going to stay there. He's going to leave. So essentially, we saw her come in, say a few words, talk with Varys, be useless, and then
no,
at the beginning,
I don't think he was
be useless again. Hold on, let me finish. Be useless again at the beginning, or in this episode as well, and then leave. And then, like, all her thing, it felt like all she was there for was to tell Varys that they're both going to die there in Westeros.
And that may very well be, but I don't think her appearances are useless. I think her appearances are very strategically placed, and I think we don't know why yet. I just feel like her presence in all of this, I mean, even though yes, last week she showed up in a very brief scene, and all her her scene was only there to plant that idea of Jon Snow in Daenerys' mind, and she kind of got the ball rolling with all of this. Now, as far as this episode, yeah, she was staying out of sight because she's already been told not only by Davos but by Jon, hey, if we see you again,
that place is
yeah,
big.
We're gonna...
She could have stayed in her room and had servants bring her food and waited them out so they leave. She didn't have to leave the whole damn Dragonstone. That's what I'm saying. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but we don't know. She may have a purpose somewhere else in pushing this whole agenda, this alliance, whatever. There may be something else that she's supposed to do that we don't know about yet, and that we won't see the fruits of that labor until maybe a couple of episodes later. I will say this. I have been told, of course, you know, there was a leak. Apparently some of the Game of Thrones stuff got leaked. Now, I don't know what happened. I purposefully am not reading any spoilers.
Very good, Hanako. I'm proud of you.
I did. Oh, yeah. I don't, because I generally don't do spoilers. The only times I actually say something about spoilers is if it's something I've heard because I just somehow stumble across it. But, one of my best friends called me and she was like, I don't want to tell you any of the spoilers, but I need to fangirl right now. I said, okay. So we sat on the phone.
I'm not giving
any spoilers. Cause like okay. I said, she didn't give me any spoilers. She just said that these next four episodes, episode 4, 5, 6, and 7, she said, it's about to get rich. She said, these episodes are going to be so epic. She said, if what she found out is true, she said, she was like, you just need to go on and prepare your will. Just get ready because Game of Thrones is about to slay us all. She was like, we all going to be laying in our beds hollering. She said, I'm just telling you now. She said, for those last three episodes especially, she said, don't put on no real clothes. She said, wear a ratty t-shirt and some sweats, because when I tell you, you're going to be sitting up on your couch sweating, trying to fit. She was like, is that serious? I was like, oh,
damn.
Okay. So
again, I'm not going to get myself that pumped up. I don't believe, no,
because she is one of those, she won't lead me astray. Like, she is one of those people that will not over-exaggerate something because she's very picky with her show. This is the same friend who at season 3, she literally did not speak to me on the phone for 8 months because she didn't want to take a chance of spoiling me on the red wedding. Like, when we talked, it was text messaging for the most part. And if we talked, it was like 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. But like long, full, drawn-out conversation, we didn't have that for almost 8 months because we eventually always hit upon all our fandoms. The night of the red wedding, I'm watching the episode. We're watching the episode together. I think she was in New York at that time watching, and I was here. She called me 2 minutes before the Reigns of Casimir started playing. She said, okay, hold on to your horses. I'll call you after the episode. And she hung up the phone, and I was like, what the hell? And then as soon as that music started playing, I was like, oh, what's about to go on? And then, of course, we know how the red wedding was.
You didn't have to bring up the red wedding.
I was like, what the fuck did I just watch? She said, you don't understand how hard it was. She said, I haven't called you because I wanted to make sure I didn't spoil that at all. She said, I have been sitting on this since I read the third book, and it was so hard. So she is one of those people that she does not over-exaggerate when it comes to stuff like this. So if she read the spoilers and it says that, you know, basically I'm going to be lying in my floor, in the fetal position, I believe her. I tend to believe her. So I'm expecting major stuff to happen. I don't know how major. I don't know which characters. But going back to Melisandre, I don't think her work is done, and I don't think it's as insignificant as you think it is. I really do think she has a bigger part
to
play.
I'm ready for her to not be on the show anymore because she serves absolutely no purpose. I do want to be wrong about it, though. I really want to be wrong about it, but she's really irritating me right now. But I say and I talk crap in the hopes that I am wrong about that, Hunter.
And I understand that. I mean, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with her character because I'm intrigued at what her character is and what she can do. But also the way she was when she was with Stannis and the fact that Shireen had to die because of what she said, that still burns me. You know, as a parent, that burns me. Like, really, you made this man sacrifice his daughter and he still died anyway? Like, so I have a very love-hate relationship with her, but I'm just interested to see. Like I said last week, you know, she is one of the Red Priestesses on this side. We haven't seen them in this episode yet, but, you know, there's another Red Priest hanging with the Hound and Beric Dondarrion. And, you know, I just feel like the Red Priests are going to play some major. There's something big that's going to happen with them.
All
so
right, that's
let's
fine.
Hope.
Let's
hope. That way I can say, aha, I told you so.
Okay. Like that time you was wrong about
you know what?
Blood.
And I knew you was about to bring that up. I knew you was about to bring that up. Yes, I was wrong about Bill on True Blood. Okay, I admit it. Let it go, Kat. Let it go.
You know me too well. Okay.
Let it die.
All right, all right. No. Die. Let me die. Okay, yep. So So meanwhile,
I think we need to go to. Yeah, I think we need to go to. Go ahead.
Go
Westeros. Westeros.
Okay. Go ahead.
The whole title of the episode is The Queen's Justice, and we get to see a little bit of that justice in the next scene because Euron Greyjoy goes parading through the streets.
Oh my God!
With Ilaria, and I can never think of Baby Sand Snake's name, but you know, and her youngest and the youngest daughter. And Yara, and you know, he's like feeling like a rock star. He's like, yeah, they're cheering for Greyjoy. And this is the thing, I like his character because his character is very unpredictable and he's crazy, but at the same time, I don't like him because he's so self-serving. Like, his whole purpose is, I just want people to cheer for, you know, I want people to cheer for me. I want people to acknowledge me because, of course, you know, the Greyjoys are pretty much, nobody cares about them. Nobody cares about the Iron Islands and all this other stuff. So he brings Ilaria and her daughter and sits them at Cersei's feet.
Mm.
And one thing I have to say about Ilaria, she is fierce all the way through. You know, she is upset. I don't think she's scared. I just think she's mad maybe about the fact that she got caught. But he parades her in front of Cersei, and this is the other thing I do love about Euron Greyjoy. His interactions with Jaime are so cruel, but they are so hilarious.
Yeah.
He throws so much shade at Jaime. Like, I'm sorry, this episode, poor Jaime, he was just getting shade thrown at him in all directions.
Oh, my God,
but,
everybody.
Oh, my God. But, yes, so, you know, Euron brings them there, and then Cersei takes them down to the dungeons, and she basically gives this big old speech about, you know, how Ilaria killed her daughter and how Marcella was good. And as soon as she starts saying this, I'm like, oh, I think I see where this is going. And then as my daughter pointed out, she said, oh, I know where this is going. She said, Cersei don't wear lipstick. And I'm like, what are you talking? And I looked at her and I was like, wait. I said, oh, this is about to be so
because
ugly because she did
the
same.
The shade of the lipstick was so, it was like it sat off of her face. And I'm just like, what does she have on lipstick? What is happening right? And then I was just like, oh, here we go.
The closer she got to that daughter and the more she started talking, I said, oh, she's about to do to her the same thing that Ilaria did to Marcella.
You know what?
And
I
that's
wasn't
exactly
mad.
Exactly what she did.
I mean,
one thing about Cersei and her vengeance, she is very much an eye for an eye. She did this, you know, even with the Sister Unella, just what she did with her, it was kind of like, oh, you tortured me, you did this to me. Okay, I'm going to give it back to you tenfold. So she's doing the same thing. You know, she didn't have to watch Marcella die. Marcella was already dead when she got back to Westeros. But Cersei was like, oh, yeah, not only am I going to kill your daughter, I'm going to make you watch. And you're going to have to sit here and watch her rot. Cersei, you know, I don't like Cersei's character, but no one can deny Cersei is a beast. She is a beast to be reckoned with.
I was not mad at her because I thought that daughter was innocent. She didn't do anything to anybody. And it was, I don't care how terrible Cersei was. I don't care how much you want to hurt Cersei. The daughter was not a dig to anyone. She was willing to marry into the family. She was practically her daughter-in-law or whatever-in-law. And
right.
She killed her in cold blood. And she did not have to. Her lover was, He
was
got
arrogant.
Himself
and
he got
exactly.
himself killed. And, I mean, he did not have to go down that route. And she did not have to do that. So, you know what? In the first time in the history of the show, I was down. You know, when Cersei did that, I was just like, I'm not mad.
Right.
Whatever.
Right.
I'm sorry. I like you, lady. And I don't really like Cersei at all. But that daughter was not in this. And you
right.
did wrong by her. So, whatever.
Right. So, in a sense, it was the Queen's justice. She she did what she was supposed to do. I mean, I just watched the scene and I was just like,
justice.
Yeah, as a parent, I would have done the same thing. You know, if somebody did that to my child, I'm supposed to turn the other cheek and be the bigger person. No, you're going to feel my pain and you're going to feel it 10 times more. So yeah, on that note, I can empathize with Cersei. It was still cruel, but yeah, that was still a great scene.
And I mean, how they weren't even able to touch or hug or anything like that.
Right, like she can't even comfort her child while she dies. But again, Cersei didn't get a chance to do all of that for her daughter. So she's like, oh, okay, you took that away from me, so I'm going to take it away from you, but I'm going to give it to you worse. So, you know, unfortunately, and just the amount of control Cersei had in all of that, because you could see when she was sitting on the Iron Throne, you could see she wanted to just get up out that throne and just choke the life out of her, and she held it together. Even when Euron was in her face talking about, yeah, I want this, da 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 da, she was like, I think her exact words were, you shall get what you deserve after the war is over. He was like, hold up, that's not what we agreed to, but she didn't agree to anything. You said you was going to bring her a gift. She didn't say anything about paying you in kind for that gift. But here's the thing. What he thinks he deserves and what Cersei thinks he deserves, two totally different things, because Cersei already let him know what she thought about him during that first meeting, because she was like, you're unloyal. You killed your own brother. You turned on family. And, you know, for Cersei, family is everything, at least the part that she cares about. So... yeah, she's not marrying him. I just want to see what she's going to do. Is she going to throw him off a bridge, too?
I don't know what she's going to do, but I will say, him walking around, parading the women through the town like he was Caesar returning from war, that was just great. That was just amazing. So I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed his craziness. And I think that, he's going to get something that he doesn't, he's not, he's going to be a genie. And she's going to get him what he deserves, and he's not going to like it, or he's going to be dead, and it won't matter. But speaking about Cersei is very loyal and all about family. Yes, yeah, she's just out with it now with her brother.
Right. She's the queen. She can do what she wants. So we just go. Look, first of all, the funny thing, well, I won't say funny. First of all, you just got done torturing this woman and killing her child, and that makes you horny. You immediately come in and start kissing and going down and doing all this. Oh, okay. We all knew Cersei was twisted, but damn.
I didn't even think about it that way. That's funny. And then the next morning, it was like, we can't be seen. We got it. She was like, oh, the servant's going to come in, who has my haircut, by the way, because usually all the women have long hair and stuff.
Right.
And so she was just like, you know what, I'm going to give me a Cersei cut. And then she was like, you know, oh, by the way, change the sheet. And I was just like, gross.
That was a mess. I was like, wow, okay, so we just out and proud, because... I mean, really, what are you going to tell the queen who blew up the Sept with thousands of people, with hundreds of people in it and the surrounding streets? Oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, okay. Yeah, let her do what she want to do.
Because the altar, unless you kill her dad and you make sure she's dead.
Right.
You can't really do anything. Not really.
Right.
Right, so... let's see. Where are we going next?
I believe we are going to Winterfell.
Okay, let's do it.
Sansa.
Wow. Very queenly. Very queen of the people.
Sansa, she has learned a lot in her time south, because she was given, I mean, literally she was doing, I want to say she was doing a better job than Kat was doing in first season. Like the maester was telling her, okay, we need this, and she's, okay, let's do this, let's do this. Oh, they have armor. Why is there not leather on that armor? They need it, blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, her plan for the people
the grain.
That was a brilliant plan. She was like, we'll go ahead and get the grain now. If they don't need it, we'll send it back. But if they have to flee their homes and come here, they're not going to have time for that. That was such a smart decision. You know, and it's like when you think about where Sansa was, like first season, all she was cared about was, you know, being a princess and, you know, marrying Joffrey and having his babies, and she was so blah, 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 and now she is like, she is a powerhouse. You know,
why
like John
is Littlefinger
really
still there though? Why?
I don't know. I honestly don't know what purpose Littlefinger serves now. But, you know, he was giving her advice, and I just couldn't help but think, you know, this advice that you're giving her is something that she can also apply to you. It said, you know, I'm looking it up. He said, fight every battle, everywhere, always. Everyone is your enemy. Everyone is your friend. And, you know, it's kind of like he could be speaking about anybody, but I don't know if he's necessarily applying himself to the situation too, because she can look at him the same way. Like, he can be her friend. He could be her, you know, he can be what she needs. He comes through in the clinch. But the minute he thinks that Sansa is not going to serve his purpose, is he going to betray her just like he's done everybody else?
Yeah, because he's who he is.
Yep. But, you know, I just find it so funny that he says that, and then all of a sudden, my lady, there's someone at the gate. And
I thought it was Arya.
I thought it was, too, until I saw the cart.
Yeah.
And then I was like, hold up. Is it Bran? Because, you know, I was saying last week, I said, okay, I really need for them to reunite with Bran. I was like, Arya needs to come home to Winterfell, and then they need to go to Castle Black and pick up Bran. And then he can, you know, he can tell them everything that's going on because he, you know, he has all these visions. And then he's there, and I'm feeling like I literally let out a scream in my house. I was like, yes! And my daughter was downstairs because she had already seen it. She said, I already know what part you're on. So that was great, but his reaction threw me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I thought he would be so much happier to see one of his, anybody from his family alive. And then, you know, the way he was when they were sitting near the tree and talking, it was creepy, but it's kind of like, I think I read a description somewhere, it's kind of like, when you think about it, you know, Bran had to become the three-eyed raven way ahead of his time because of the fact that, you know, he did something stupid and he alerted the White Walkers to where they were and, you know, they in turn came after them. And the three-eyed raven had to go ahead and, quote-unquote, download his memories into Bran. So it's kind of like Bran is this brand new computer, and instead of, you know, organizing the files before when you put them on the computer, they're just all over the place. And so, you know, it's kind of like he's got bits, you know, just like he said, he can't put it all together yet because he can see the past, but he can also see the future. But of course, he can't be everywhere every time. So he may not yet have been able to figure out, okay, this has already happened to this person, you know, instead of, oh, this is what's going to happen to that person. So he's got all this stuff running around in his head, and I just don't think he has room for emotion and sentimentality and all this other stuff.
Yep.
So, but it was just really, really weird to watch because he was, you know, as a child, he was probably, aside from Arya, the most playful out of them.
Yeah.
And to see him now, he's, and I guess you could say it for Arya too, they're both so serious now. It's like,
They had to survive through rough times, man.
Right.
The Starks had it rough.
They did. But it's so weird to watch. And I know it was painful for Sansa. And then when he started talking about her wedding day, and I think she kind of got a grasp of what he meant. Because, of course, if you don't pay attention to all this other stuff, you don't know what the three-eyed raven is. The three-eyed raven was a myth for a lot of them.
Mm.
So she doesn't understand. And then when he starts talking about her wedding, she gets emotional because, you know, it could have been a lot of things. One, it could have been a reminder of something that she wished she didn't have to go through. Two, the fact that her brother can recite to her about her wedding night.
No, not even recite, and he sees it.
Yes,
all of it.
Yes, but the thing is, okay, so I guess you have to think about it. It has to cross her mind, okay, if he saw that, maybe he saw everything else too. You know, and this is, you know, Bran is grown up, but this is still her little brother. This is her baby brother, and the fact that he can see everything that she went through. Maybe that's hurtful, and then maybe at the same time it's embarrassing for her too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because that's not something you want anybody to see. I mean, Theon didn't even want to watch that, even when he was forced to. So, you know, just that reunion, it's like it was a reunion that we all wanted, because we've all been wanting the Stark children to kind of find their way back to each other. But at the same time, it was really kind of sad because it wasn't what Sansa was expecting.
No, not at all. But
so, but again, I'm waiting for Bran to say, I'm waiting for him to see Littlefinger and be like, oh yeah, you're the person who, you know, threw my dad up under the bus. And the reason, I'm waiting for that. I need that to come out of his mouth.
Oh,
I need that to come out of his mouth. Because then that would give Sansa a reason to kill Littlefinger, and I'm still adamant about the fact that Littlefinger is going to die at Sansa's hand. I just need to see that happen.
Oh.
I need to see that happen.
He deserves it. He deserves it, and right now, if that's the case, she's kind of playing with the food because she just, like, has him around.
Right. And her... Okay, so we were talking about the shade being thrown at Jaime. Sansa's shade at Littlefinger, I live for it. I live for it, because he's like, yeah, you're not thinking about, the threat to the side. And she's like, oh, you're trying to tell me that the woman who murdered my mother, my brother, and my father is crazy? Yeah, thanks. Duly noted. I was like, yes. Sansa's like, I am not here for your BS, and I'm all for it. I need a Team Sansa t-shirt, because, yes, she is giving me some life right now. Like, she is not around any of these people who, quote unquote, have control over her. Like, Littlefinger for a while did when she was younger, but now she's her own woman, and she's letting him know, look, I'm not here for your shit. I'm not.
Mm. I hear it. Okay, yeah, so where are we going next?
We're going to the Citadel. And to the fact that Sam is awesome because he cured Jorah.
Whoa, he sure did. That was nice.
It was nice. And, you know, it's so funny because, you know, I mentioned the Harry Potter connection with the Citadel and the Archmaester that's been working with Sam, and the fact that, you know, he told Sam not to do it. You could kill him. It's not going to work. And Sam did it anyway. I can't help but go back to think of Half-Blood Prince when Ron got poisoned. And he's the potions professor. He's supposed to be able to think of an antidote. And Harry had to go and cure Ron while he stood by and did nothing. So I was like, oh, this is a funny parallel of characters. Like, you're supposed to be the all-knowing, you're supposed to be the teacher, and your student has to come in and save the day. So why are you here? But, right. You know, I think maybe he's there to kind of help Sam in his journey. You know, some people, they tend to find themselves when they're faced with adversity and when they're faced with people who are doubting them. You know, Sam has grown up with that all his life. We've met his father. His father is horrible. I want his father to die like a very serious, painful, just awful death. But here at the Citadel, you know, Sam is still getting, you know, he's having to pay his dues. He's having to do all the little grunge work. But at the same time, the Archmaester is trying to keep him from doing stuff, but he's not openly forbidding him. It's kind of like he's giving Sam just enough for Sam to say, oh, okay, let me go and do this and let me try to figure out that. And, you know, I just kind of feel like he's helping Sam by not helping him on purpose, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I can't openly help you, but here I'm gonna put these ideas in your head so that you can help yourself.
Right. Yeah. I like my favorite line from this was, "How did you figure out how to do this?" And he said, "I read the book."
Right. You know? Exactly.
It's literally like how when people ask you how you do all amazing things, like I just read the recipe. I just followed the directions. I just read the freaking book. Like. Sometimes that's all you have to do with things.
Right. Right. Just read a freaking book. But yeah, and the fact that Jorah is now on his way back to Daenerys and he's going to be cured and he can help her do whatever it is she's going to do. And, you know, I was excited about the fact that he and Sam met because of the connection with the Lord Commander. But now, this is going to be interesting because, you know, pretty much John was pretty much a surrogate son to his dad. So I kind of wonder how that's going to go over. Like, this is the person who your dad, you know, when he gets to Dragonstone and he sees Jon Snow with the sword that should have been his, you know, the one that the Lord Commander gave to Jon, Longclaw. That was supposed to be Jorah's sword before he got banished. So that dynamic is going to be a bit interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
But I like the fact, I like the fact that these characters are starting to connect in a more tangible way than they have been. Because like prior to now, it's always been like 2 or 3 or 4 or 6 degrees of separation, and now they're kind of working their way towards each other. So I kind of like it. And I do hope that Jorah and Sam kind of find a way to come back together
Sam is probably going to keep Jorah from attacking Jon Snow.
I think that too, but I think they're going to help each other in other ways as well, because you got to think about
it. That's how it's going to go down, though. That's how it's going to go down when they first meet, and then they're going to like break down and help each other and blah, blah, blah.
Right. But you know, Jorah is also a renowned fighter. And of course, John is on the island to get dragon glass so that they can make it into weapons to kill the White Walkers. So,
yeah,
he's going to be involved in that fight.
Yeah.
And who knows, maybe now that he's cured, maybe those, you know, especially since, you know, I don't know, maybe he'll be impervious to the White Walkers. Let's hope. That would be nice.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Theon. Crew knows he was a coward because he got on his ship or a ship or something like that, and he's like, I couldn't save my sister, and he was like, did you let him take her? And he was like, no. And he's like, well, if you didn't, you would be dead, because they know how that shit goes down. And then he was just left like in a fetal position on the deck of a boat.
Yeah, I kind of think Theon's going to have, I don't know.
Theon, I think he's going to come back. I think he was saved for another day because he wants to go back and he's going to save his sister. That's how that's going to go. He's going to go there, not metaphorically.
I kind of think that's going to happen too. I was kind of on that fence that he did what he did simply because he was scared and because of PTSD. But after discussing it, you know, on the podcast last week and just with different other people that I'm friends with that watch the show, I kind of see everyone else's, you know, point. They're like, yeah, he was struggling with the PTSD, but I really think that he it was kind of a live today, fight tomorrow type situation. And he knew that he wouldn't have, you know, if he would have tried to fight Euron at that particular moment, both of them would have ended up dead. And so I don't know. I think he feels bad because now his sister's in that position. But I don't think, I'm not giving up on Theon yet. So, I just hope I'm not wrong about him. I really want that. Like, Theon's character has been through so much. Like, we have liked his character, and then absolutely hated his character, and then we felt sorry for his character. And I think some of us really kind of starting to root for his character after he saved Sansa, you know, because he basically just wants to redeem himself. He wants to make up for the mistakes that he's made. And, you know, you can't really make up for betraying your best friend and getting him killed. Well, you know, or, you know, just leading into that whole thing to where Rob ends up being killed. But, you know, you can try to at least make something good come from it. And I kind of hope Theon gets that little piece of redemption, because I think he's fought for it. And I think he, you know, whether it's just for him to be at peace when he dies or whatever, I just really want that for this character. So I don't know. I think I sympathize with him way more than I ever intended to. Cause I was like, yeah, you betrayed Rob. I can hate your character for the rest of the show.
Right.
I just feel like I can't do that.
Well, I don't hate his character. I don't feel anything for him. Like, I don't hate him anymore. I don't feel sorry for him. I don't root for him. I might root for him if he finds a way to heroically save his sister and it's something else. But Red Wedding and Rob and Nope.
Yeah.
He had a part in taking over Winterfell. Nope.
Yeah, yeah.
No, sure. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
So let's go to the wars. The first war where the Unsullied took, what was it, Castle Rock?
It was Casterly Rock.
Casterly Rock, okay.
Yes, that is the Lannister ancestral home.
Right. They just Tyrion, man, he is crazy. I can't, because they were like, nobody's ever been able to take that over. Nobody's ever been able to do anything, but I hate my family so much. I'm going to tell you about my little, I was going to say something really not nice, but my little.
The whole door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His little cave. So, yeah. I don't think they would have been able to get in or do anything if they didn't know about that, but I found it kind of awesome that what's the brother's name, the hand with the one hand,
Jamie.
I found it kind of cool that Jamie predicted that it would happen because he knows his brother, you know what I mean?
Yes. So, and I thought that too. I, you know, one of the things that we've seen with Tyrion through, you know, especially with season two, where the Battle of Blackwater happened, you know, Tyrion is not much of a fighter, but we've known this from the beginning. Tyrion is probably one of the most intellectual, if not the most intellectual person on the show. You know, as far as the way he thinks about things and the way he kind of strategizes, I think he, Varys, and Littlefinger are all kind of on that same plane for different reasons, you know. And to hear him lay out this plan, I was so impressed, and I was like, yes, this is going to be it, da-da-da-da-da. And then when they defeated them so easily, I was like, I don't know how I feel about this, because, you know, Yara's, you know, her ships were part of that overall plan, and we see how that went south. So I started kind of getting a weird feeling, and then when Grey Worm said they're supposed to be way, you know, a lot more here, I was like, oh, wait a minute. And when he climbed up and we saw what all of Euron's ships, which I need to understand how Euron is sneaking up and doing all of this destructive damage, and nobody knows. Like, why are the dragons not in the air yet destroying this man's fleet? That's what I need to know.
I don't even have speculation, because to me it seems implausible, but, you know, it's a TV show, so, I mean, what can you do?
Right. But and here's the other thing that kind of worries me, because I've seen comments on, like, the different memes. The memes this week were amazing.
Crazy.
And most of them are because of the last part of this scene that we're discussing, which we'll talk about in a minute. But one of the things I've seen is, you know, the little memes where it has the people and they're trying to calculate how something happens, and it's got all this algebraic and trigonometry.
Yeah.
Okay, so someone said it was kind of like trying to figure out how Daenerys has three dragons, has an Unsullied army, has this, has the iron, you know, has the Iron Islands ships, has this, has that, has all these great advisors, and she's still losing. Like, she's being defeated. And I couldn't help but think about Robb Stark. Because Robb Stark, until he walked into the Red Wedding, he was winning all of his battles. He was doing things that no one anticipated. And that's one of the things that Jaime learned from. And he says so in this scene. Basically, what happens is while you know, the Unsullied are at Casterly Rock trying to take it, the Lannister army is at Highgarden trying to take it, because Highgarden right now, they have the most money, they have the gold, they have the food. It's one of the things Lady Olenna has always said about Highgarden, and how they've always been, you know, how they've been the one kind of bailing the Lannisters out. Well, now the Lannisters have come to call, and they easily take Highgarden, because Highgarden soldiers are not known for their fighting skills. And
how did we do? It's best to be
right.
Wait, what
exactly?
Is it? As could be expected.
As well as can be expected.
Yeah, there
I
it
think.
Is.
Yes. And, you know, Lady Olenna said something, and she admitted, she said, well, you know, we're not known for our fighting. And she says something to him, and he explains how they kind of overtook the armies. And he says, same thing Robb Stark did to me at, I forgot what place. He was like, I learned from my mistakes.
Yeah,
he says, I learned from my mistakes. So it's kind of like these little parallels, like Daenerys is, again, she's got all this backing, and she's got this and she's got that, and she's steadily losing. We already know what happened to Robb Stark. You know, he was winning his battles, and just in one fell swoop, in one night, everything was gone. So I kind of don't, I'm hoping that's not what's going to happen with Daenerys, but I can't help but draw the parallels.
Yeah.
But getting back to Highgarden, because, you know, this episode was great, because the one thing everyone wanted happened at the beginning of the episode. Like, everybody, I don't know one person who watches Game of Thrones who has said, oh, yeah, I really don't care if Jon and Daenerys meet. I've never met one person like this was the meeting everybody was anticipating. The last scene is the one that kind of stole the show, because it was the scene nobody was expecting, you know? And basically, Jaime comes in, and Lady Olenna, she's still dressed in her black, because she's still mourning her son and her grandchildren. And she's very matter-of-fact. We all know she doesn't mince words, and she's not one to cower away. She's never one to, you know, kind of play the victim. She was like, oh, okay, we lost, and how do we fight, and blah, 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 blah. So she point blank asked Jaime, she's like, so how will you do it, knowing that she's about to die? She's very matter of fact. She was like, will you kill me with that sword? And she takes a couple of digs at Joffrey while she's doing this, because Jaime is carrying Joffrey's sword. So we kind of all maybe figure that something is about to come out of this, because she, I mean, she's just taking, like, she's got a little butter knife first, and she's just taking all these little jabs at Jamie about Joffrey. She, you know, she says he really was, what did she say? He really was a she called him something. He really was I don't know. She called him something and a psycho or something, and Jamie just kind of looks at her. Because, of course, Jamie is still trying to put up this air like nobody knows that Cersei's children were his children. He's still trying to, you know, deflect all of this stuff. And everybody pretty much in this episode and in all the episodes so far this season have pretty much said, yeah, we know that's your woman. Yeah, we know you're screwing her. Yeah, we know those are your children. And what? This is common knowledge. So the only person who Jamie who doesn't know, I guess, is Jamie himself. He doesn't know it's common knowledge. But, So Lady Olenna asks how she's about to die, and Jamie basically gives her these scenarios that Cersei wanted for her. He says he talked her out of it, and he pours poison in her cup. Now, Jamie is being very gracious at this point. Lady Olenna, she drinks the poison. I mean, she chugs it. She takes it, you know.
I mean, she's off it back.
She knocked it back. And then she puts it down. She was like, oh, she says, will it hurt? And he was like, no. And she said, oh, good. I wouldn't want it to be like your son's was. She was like, because you see, I never knew how the poison worked. And with that, you can see Jamie's face changes.
I was just like, oh, this is about to happen.
And she just basically let him know that she was the one who killed Joffrey, that she was the one who planned it. And then her last words to him were, tell Cersei I want her to know it was me.
Oh my God.
Mic drop, curtain closed. Jamie could do nothing but turn around and walk away because
he was gonna pull the sword out.
I thought so too, but at this point, what would it have accomplished? She's going to die anyway. And, you know, Jamie, regardless of what we've seen of his character, one thing that was established when he was roaming the countryside with Brienne is that Jamie actually is a man of honor. You know, he may do some things that are kind of not on the up and up, but when it comes to death, when it comes to killing, he does the honorable thing. You know, he was trying to give this woman a gracious death because he just, you know, I guess he felt like, you know, Cersei already killed your family. She already took everything from you. Why do I need to add to that misery by making you die a miserable death? So he was trying to be nice, and then when she sticks this knife in him, there's so many things going on here. One, somebody that you absolutely never picture in 1,000 years admits to being the one who murdered your son. Two, now you got to go back and rethink all this other stuff that's going on because of your brother. Because
right,
your
that's
dad,
what I was thinking about.
Because
yes.
Your dad was so hell-bent on having Tyrion, you know, blamed and convicted, you know, of Joffrey's death. Cersei was so convinced. And Jaime, basically, you know, Jaime has harbored this, I won't say maybe hate for Tyrion, but he did have, like, he had some ill feelings towards him because he let Tyrion go, and Tyrion killed their dad before he left. So he's got all these conflicting feelings. And now what is the one thing that's sitting in your mind, probably even more so than the fact that I killed your son, is that your brother was innocent. He told you he was innocent, and none of y'all believed him. And this is why right now he's sitting on the side as the hand of Daenerys Targaryen instead of sitting by y'all's side helping y'all win this war. Jamie's got a whole bunch of things going on in his mind. Lady Olenna, she left this world giving him a mind fuck. And there's absolutely nothing. Putting a sword through her wouldn't have made any difference.
Man,
she screwed him over.
Did you know this already? We knew this already that she did this to Joffrey, right?
Yes,
we knew this, but I forgot. I was just like, oh yeah, and I was like, I knew this. Why am I like shocked?
You know, so. I'm really mad about the only thing I could say But again, this probably speaks to her character too. But I really would not have been mad if she had kind of casually thrown in there the fact that Littlefinger was the one who helped her carry that out.
Ooh. Oh.
I wouldn't have been mad at all.
Oh.
Because I really, really, really do not like that man. So I wouldn't have been mad at all. You could have just thrown that in there just a little bit later, Lena, or maybe there's something. They've pretty much taken over Highgarden, so I'm sure something there exists that can implicate Littlefinger, because I'm pretty sure she would have kept something just in case Littlefinger would have tried to screw her over.
I just think that after all the stuff they've been through all the houses and Cersei blowing up their whole family and everything like that, I just thought it was a real crappy thing for them to do, to go to a Highgarden and do that. And that is just super crappy. Like, they're just like, you know what, we're in the mood today, we're just gonna go and take their stuff and kill them all and whatever, let's just take it over, it doesn't matter. And
but you, like, gotta think about it, Cersei knows that Highgarden sided with Daenerys, so at this point she's like, oh, you're my enemy now because you're siding
when
with,
did that happen,
you know? You don't remember Lady Olenna being there on Dragonstone? She was the one that told Daenerys, one, don't listen to men, ignore them. And she was like, so she, you know, so Cersei already knows if Lady Olenna is with Daenerys, Daenerys will have access to all of Highgarden's resources. And you have to think about it. Aside from the Iron Bank, Highgarden probably has the most gold in all of the Seven Kingdoms. That's the one thing that they always drilled
into the Lannisters. They really should have beefed up their fighting skills.
Yeah, they should have. But I guess they thought nobody was going to come for them. But, I mean, this is Cersei.
Man, that is rough. But that was the best exit character that I have ever seen in a very long time. It was just so gripping, and I enjoyed it. And then I really liked that we left the room with her alive. She didn't, like, pass out or any crazy stuff
right.
like that. And it was just like, she could still be alive. Maybe she knew the poison was coming. Maybe she was drinking it. What's up? I don't know, you know, but those are just whatever, but that was just one of my favorite episodes.
And then
from beginning
also,
to end.
You know, her death is going to reverberate. At, like, I think this is going to be the beginning of the wedge between Jaime and Cersei. This is going to be the beginning because, one, Jaime didn't kill her, you know, in the way that Cersei wanted. And then, two, even after he found out the truth, he still didn't do it.
No,
you know,
I think the beginning of the wedge was when he came back and he saw her on the throne and their kids. That was the crack. And then now, I guess it started, I guess then a physical wedge through the crack, if you want to go through, you know, through it like that. But it was already starting.
Right, but, you know, I think this is going, because it's kind of like now you have to reevaluate her state of mind and the way she's treated your brother. And, you know, again, this is the reason why Tyrion has turned his back on his family, is because of what Cersei and Tywin did. So now you got to start, you really have to think, I mean, Lady Olenna said to Jaime, you know, she's gonna be your downfall. She told him that. She warned him. And now you got to go back and rethink everything Cersei has done to get to where she is. You know, I think they're about to have that conversation about Tommen, and that's gonna drive a wedge because they still haven't talked about that. He mentioned that last episode.
Yeah, and she just keeps brushing it off.
Right. So I'm ready to see. I'm just ready to see how this is all about to come together. I just need it to happen. And now that I know that that the last few episodes of this season are about to be so major. It's kind of like I want to see them, and at the same time, I don't, because we only have four more episodes. See, if we were where we normally are, we would still have seven more episodes to go, and it will be, you know, a little more drawn out. But we only have four episodes left, and then we have to wait another year to find out how all this ends.
I'm fine with it. You want to know why? Because I think instead of having those slow episodes that where nothing happened except for they're like talking at a table and all this type of stuff, this is more condensed. They got to keep it tight and together, and I really enjoy it more. And I think pretty much every episode this season was fantastic, you know?
I don't think anything was slow.
So,
and I think probably because of the fact that they're working with fewer episodes, they pretty much everything has been action-packed, and I don't mean necessarily like, you know, explosives and fighting and everything. Even the scenes where it's just dialogue, everything has been witty, everything has been intelligent. Like, there has been nothing there that's made me be like, oh, can we please skip to this? Like, all of the conversations.
I know.
You don't like the red woman. We get it. But, I mean, I just love that, you know, the conversations, even with these conversations, we're learning, even though we've been watching this now for 6.5 seasons, we're still learning so much about these characters because we're seeing how they interact with other people that they've never been with before. So different facets of the personality are coming out. Like, we all knew Missandei was smart because she was, when she was a slave in, I forgot what city she was in, you know, they used her as a translator. So we knew she had some intelligence, but just the way that her character has blossomed just in the last season or so, she's gotten, you know, it's kind of like Daenerys doesn't treat her servants, or I won't even say servants, she doesn't treat them like servants, I think is what I'm trying to say. She looks at Missandei with respect. She respects her opinion. The same with Grey Worm, the same with Tyrion. All of them at one time or another have been slaves. Even Tyrion, even though he was only a slave for a short time, he was still treated that way. And even when he wasn't a slave, his family treated him less than they would a commoner because of who he was, because of the fact that he was a dwarf, because of the fact that you know, their mother/wife died in childbirth, giving birth to him. So, you know, Daenerys takes these people and she kind of elevates them a little bit, and she treats them with respect and as equals. She did it with Jorah. She did it with Dario. And it's just kind of like, so to see them kind of elevate with that, it's just, I like it. Because yeah. It's like, unless you've really watched, you know, been watching the show and really paying attention and thinking about it, you almost forget that Missandei was a slave, that Grey Worm was a slave that was, you know, basically trained to be nothing more than a killing machine. You forget about all this because of the way that they've been treated and the way that they've come up. Even with Grey Worm, Grey Worm spoke no English before, and he's learned. Anybody will tell you it's hard to learn another language, and the fact that he has done so and done so masterfully to the point where, you know, the other masters in the other place, you know, they all looked up to him. They all, you know, respected his opinion. You know, that's saying a lot for someone who was a former slave. And, you know, again, their characters, we're seeing different things. We see how Grey Worm is the masterful warrior. You know, when they got finished defeating Casterly Rock, he knew immediately. Everybody else was like, yeah, we did this. And he's like, no, something is wrong. like, there should be more people here. And he immediately knew where to look and knew what was going on. It's like, just to see that mind at work, I love it. I love the character development that we've been seeing.
Well,
so far.
I see what you mean, but I'm not really sure why people think slaves are dumb or, you know, like, don't have intelligence just because you happen to end up in a situation where, you know, you're at the hands of an asshole. You're not powerful enough to overcome them at that moment in time. Doesn't mean
no. And I'm not.
I know you
saying
mean,
that
I know,
they are.
I know what you meant. But
traditionally,
like that. Yeah.
That's how they want it because of course if you
not
give someone
or classically educated or anything like that, but I wouldn't say
right.
intelligence is not there. It just has not been developed, and they didn't have opportunities or whatever. But they have like. I don't know, life experience. And so I guess they are smart in different ways. That's not, you know, I can't freaking quote the Shakespeare of Westeros or anything like that. But they're still smart in a way that matters. And they are smart enough to help a queen, like you said. And that's a lot. You don't have to, I think they're just impressive as people and who have overcome assholes. So,
yes.
Yeah. That's
burnt crispy assholes.
And then you, as you pointed out, like all of these are like the Island of Misfit Toys, with
yes.
because all of them
that is an
have
awesome
a crazy a crazy background. All of them have been hurt by other people, and I dare say I don't want to say damaged because they have repaired themselves, so you can't say they're broken or anything like that because they're just as good as new. So I like that you brought this up, and I like that you made me think about that in order to have an opinion about their character. So yeah, might be done. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, this whole episode was just, it was amazing from start to finish. I enjoy every minute of it, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen in this next episode.
All right, folks. I guess we can wrap that up. With Hanako, we can just talk for 30 minutes. That didn't happen. I knew that wasn't going to happen. That's why I didn't say anything. When you like, yeah, we don't have to start that break. And I was like, I know you.
Yeah, well.
But it's always been a joy to talk to you guys. We'll see you next week when we talk about Game of Thrones. We have a website. It is scifipartyline.com. You can visit us there. You can go on Twitter, Facebook, all the places except for Google Plus because we don't check that anymore. Oh man. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Bye.
End of line.